Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. November 2nd was supposed to be a good day for the Democrats. They wanted it, they could taste it, and they lost on every front, at the White House, in the Senate. Now the Democrats are trying to figure out what went wrong and where the party goes from here. Tonight On Point, after the Kerry defeat, the soul-searching of the Democratic Party. But first, senior aides to Attorney General John Ashcroft say today it is likely their boss will leave his post before the start of President Bush's second term. Ashcroft has been a favorite of George Bush's base of religious conservatives and a lightning rod for criticism from the Democrats. Joining me now from Washington is Mark Hosenball, correspondent for Newsweek magazine covering terrorism, intelligence, and law enforcement. Mark Hosenball, what's the word in Washington today on Attorney General John Ashcroft?
Well, the word, in fact, is not exactly as you stated it earlier. The word is that Ashcroft, like most of the other senior members of the administration, within the next couple of weeks is going to submit a pro forma resignation, which is what political appointees do at the end of any administration. And then it'll be up to the president to decide whether to keep him on. Now, my understanding is Ashcroft would sort of like to get out of his job at some point in the foreseeable future. He's tired. He's spent the last 4 years running an unexpected war on terrorism, which he didn't expect when he first became attorney general. He was a senator for many years before that, and he's just sort of burnt out like a lot of the other people at the Justice Department. But, and this is a very big but, it's Ashcroft's kind of people, the Christian evangelicals, the devout people in the middle America, who helped Bush, or arguably actually were the margin that helped Bush win re-election. And so there's now some thought, both on Ashcroft's part and, as I understand, on the part of the White House, that he might be kept on for a while, might want to stay on as well, because he feels sort of empowered and revived by the fact that his kind of people help put the president over the top. So I wouldn't necessarily expect Ashcroft to leave at the earliest any time before the president's inaugurated again in January, and he might even stay on for a few months after that. But the idea that he would still be around a year from now seems pretty unlikely.
Now, this is interesting. Maybe this is Washington tea leaves. Of course, Associated Press reporting today, his senior aides saying he is likely to leave before the start of President Bush's second term. You're saying, hold on, maybe not on that timetable.
Yeah, I think my information's about as good as you can get on this.
Of course, his name has been out there for some time now as a likely departee. Why John Ashcroft at the top of many lists on that front?
A lot of people have at least thought he would leave, and in the case of his critics, wanted him to leave for a long time because he's a controversial figure. He is very religious. He's very conservative. And arguably, he's overzealously, at least in the view of civil libertarians, stretched the law and used the law to pursue the war on terrorism. On the other hand, it's his sort of people who, as I said a minute ago, provided the margin of victory for the Bush administration, for President Bush to get back into office. And as I understand it, Ashcroft's quite sort of chuffed by that. He feels very good about that and feels that maybe he ought to stay on a little while longer and, you know, show these people that he's going to, do what they think, what he thinks they think the administration ought to do. So I just wouldn't write him off as early as quickly
as these reports are suggesting.
Some of the earlier reports did. And, I mean, I did actually before coming on this program, mm-hmm. make some effort to check what was being said, and what I came up with is exactly what I told you, and I say what I'm saying is very well founded.
Mm-hmm. So the president, not eager to be seen as brooming him out the door, and Ashcroft perhaps heartened by the big turnout of that evangelical base that he's close to.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if the president would be as happy to have Ashcroft down as long as he wants to. I don't think anybody's pushing Ashcroft out the door at all, except Ashcroft himself, who is a bit tired. And, I don't think necessarily
62 years old,
a high-pressure job for too much mm-hmm. longer. But it's my understanding that both him and the White House probably want him to stay on for a little longer.
In this flurry of speculation about his departure today, Mark Kosenbaum, what names came to the fore as potential replacements? You say, in any case, you'd expect him to be gone within a year.
Oh, I should think so. The top of the list for possible replacements is a guy who formerly served as his deputy earlier in the administration, a conservative African-American law professor from Georgia named Larry Thompson, who's a very genial, experienced law enforcement official and law professor. Another name that people have talked about is Mark Roscoe, the former governor of Montana, who also recently served as President Bush's campaign chairman, re-elected campaign chairman, and also previously had served as chairman of the Republican National Committee. There's a question over him because, A, he's not very conservative, or at least not as conservative as Ashcroft or Larry Thompson, and, B, he's very politicized, overtly politicized, because of his campaign jobs. So it might not necessarily be such a good idea to have him senior law enforcement job like that. Another name that people have certainly talked about is the current Deputy Attorney General, James Comey, formerly the U.S. Attorney, Chief Federal Prosecutor in Manhattan. He's not particularly ideological at all that I know of, and they might really want, in this case, to have an ideological person in there to keep that Republican base fired up.
John Ashcroft having set the tone, they may want to stick right with it with a second Bush administration. Interesting speculation today in both directions. Mark Kosenbaum, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mark Kosenbaum, a correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He spoke with me from Washington. The election of 2004 was a bitter loss for the Democratic Party. The Democrats lost on three fronts, and if they thought November 2nd was hard, trying to advance their agenda over the next 4 years may make this year look like a cakewalk. The Republicans control the White House, the Senate, the House of Representatives, the Supreme Court, and apparently the dialogue with Middle America. Nearly half the country voted for Kerry, but the margin that means power and victory was missing. Conservatives are on the advance, and something needs fixing in the Democratic machine. This hour on Point, the Democratic Party defeated in 2004 and looking for its way ahead. You can join the conversation tonight. What's wrong with the Democrats? Why are they losing ground? What does it mean when a party can't defeat a president with an approval rating as low as George W. Bush's? Do Democrats have to become more socially conservative to win? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Will Marshall, president of the Progressive Policy Institute and co-founder of the Democratic Leadership Council. We're going to be hearing from a lot of Democrats tonight, but we're delighted to start with you, Will Marshall. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So here we are, a couple of days now since the voting, and we all saw what happened. What is your interpretation of what occurred in this big day of voting, Will Marshall?
Well, it's as you say, Democrats pretty much got their clocks clean up and down the ballot, and I think the margin of the defeat has come as something of a rude shock to Democrats. Most of the polls saw a much tighter race than this. One poll, the Gallup show, I think sort of anticipated what actually happened. But we didn't expect this big surge of voters, particularly from the exurban and rural areas in states like Ohio, that put George Bush well over the top. And so there's a feeling of having been blindsided a little bit in addition to the bitterness of the loss.
And a tough blindside to take in a year when Democratic hopes were so high.
Well, that's right. And, in a sense, it's a tough defeat because we don't have any real excuses. You know, we had about as much money as the other side. We had lots of energy. We had a party as unified as I've seen it in decades. We had a good, strong, aggressive candidate in John Kerry. We had a vulnerable incumbent in George Bush with an indifferent record. And, you know, this is an election in which Ralph Nader did not play a pivotal role. He didn't make the difference in any of the close states. So, you know, it's hard to avoid the conclusion that we just didn't make the sale, that our central message was not compelling to enough voters in this country, and that despite a really spectacular effort to get out our vote, there just weren't enough people willing to go Democratic on Tuesday night.
Will Marshall, we're going to hear a number of perspectives tonight from Democrats on why that was and where the party may need to go next if it wants to find more votes next time out. You and your group at the Democratic Leadership Council, you were co-founder, famously involved with the Bill Clinton era and pushing the Democratic Party to the center, further, closer to the center of American political life. Is that the formula again here, or is it something different this time? What's your prescription looking forward?
Well, I wouldn't couch it in ideological terms, really. I think it's really clear that now in two straight elections, the Democrats have seen Republicans capture a majority of the vote, both in the 2002 midterm election and now in the presidential election this year. You know, we are a minority party, and so we have to expand our party. And that means you can't just craft messages to your most loyal and core supporters. Obviously, you have to energize them, but you've got to develop messages that bring people to your party, that persuade undecided, independent, moderate, swing voters to your point of view. And it's in the business of persuasion where we've fallen down, and that goes to the kind of message we send. I mean, look, there are three areas where I think we need to do a lot more work. The first is, obviously, in this campaign, we placed our bets on making a very strong critical case, you know, against George Bush, why the American people should fire him, and probably didn't invest as much energy and thought into what was the positive alternative that Democrats and the Kerry Edwards tickets were offering to the public. And we didn't offer a real agenda of reform, which an insurgent party that's out of power should be offering. Second, we didn't fully close the national security confidence gap that's dogged our parties for really since the Vietnam War. John Kerry made a valiant effort, but I think we still got some distance to go. And third, and this is the obvious story that everybody has been talking about, but, you know, we've got hit by a wave of cultural resentment. There is a feeling out there in the heartland states that the Democrats don't understand mainstream values, whether it's fair or not. The feeling is real, and people acted on it Tuesday night, and we have to really get serious about confronting this cultural gap.
That is a lot for us to feast on tonight, and we will dig into it, Will Marshall. Please stand by for a second. I want to welcome into our conversation from Los Angeles, Maxine Waters. She's, of course, Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She has been serving her seventh term in the House, representing California's 35th district. She's the former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus and is co-chair of the House Steering Committee. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, thank you for joining us tonight.
You're absolutely welcome. Delighted to be with you in this discussion.
It's great to have you. We're looking at what went wrong this week and how the Democrats and how they're thinking about the months and years ahead. First, your interpretation of the vote. White House not taken back. House lost ground. Senate lost ground. What happened, Maxine Waters?
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of things that I need to understand, even with the great turnout. I need to understand who made up the increased turnout, and I need to understand still who did not vote. And that's going to help me in understanding what we do about the base vote. As a matter of fact, Karl Rove and his strategists went to their base vote.
Sure.
They went to expand their base vote.
And in particular, that evangelical base.
That's right, that conservative evangelical base. They looked at who turned out in 2000, and they said, aha, this is our constituency, and what we need to do is just do better and get more of them. They didn't say, in order to increase the Republican Party, they have to be more liberal. They have to be more progressive. They say we have to be more conservative. We have to go after that base. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, take a real good look at who turned out and what percentage of our base turned out, and who did we not attract?
Maxine Waters,
natural base.
Yeah, I wonder if you know, of course you know that Will Marshall helped push the party toward the center in the 90s. Are you suggesting that if the Republicans are looking to the right to find their base, that the Democrats should be looking next time to the left?
I am suggesting that you can't mimic the Republican Party and do better than they do. I am not one that talks about how you become more of what you think they are. I'm talking about how do you really energize your base to the maximum degree. And I'm also talking about how you talk about the issues. I think that, you know, Kerry nuanced where he stood, you know, on the war. He voted for it, but he didn't want to bring it to a close. But he kind of wanted to get some allies to talk about it. And I think that, you know, if security was an issue, that not only do you talk about how we defeat an enemy who attacks us and the right one, but how you talk about what is your vision for peace on earth.
Maxine Waters, we've got to take a short break. And Will Marshall, we'll be right back. We're talking about the Democratic Party after the Kerry defeat. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Democratic Party after the Kerry defeat and the soul-searching Democrats are doing about their performance and their future. My guest tonight, Will Marshall, president of the Progressive Policy Institute, co-founder of the Democratic Leadership Council, joins us from Arlington, Virginia. And from Los Angeles, Congresswoman Maxine Waters from California's 35th District. She's serving her seventh term in the House of Representatives. She's co-chair of the powerful House Democratic Steering Committee, maybe not quite as powerful tonight as it was a week ago. You can join this conversation as well. What does it mean when a party can't defeat a president with an approval rating as low as George W. Bush's? And was it the message or the messenger or something else entirely? What will it take to plant some blue states in the red middle of the country? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Will Marshall, I wish you'd respond to some of what Maxine Waters is sharing with us here. She's saying you can't mimic the Republicans. You've got to look to your own base, maybe not try to go for that center exactly, but to some deeper wells of potential Democratic support. This looks like the opposite of your 1990s advice. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I've never proposed mimicking the Republicans, but put that aside. We had a strong mobilization campaign in this race. We went from 105 million voters in 2000 to 120 million voters. About 60% of the electorate turned out. We haven't seen those kind of numbers since the 1960 presidential election. We spent through the 527s and other efforts, you know, over $200 million on an unprecedented effort to energize, mobilize our so-called base. The problem is that that's not enough for either party. It's necessary, but insufficient. You've got to have a strong message which persuades unaligned, undecided voters to your case. So, you know, if it's just a question of a strong mobilization effort, which we had this time, and a strong message and mobilization, which they had, you know, the former usually is going to beat the latter. I think that we always want to mobilize our base, but you know, the problem is that we haven't had a majority. The Democrats haven't had a majority in this country for quite some time. This is not a new story. The last Democratic president to get over 50% of the vote was Jimmy Carter back in 1976. So we have some persuasion to do. We've got to frame arguments to people. We've got to give them good reasons to be for us as well as to be against the other side. And we've got to be listening to these voters and be attentive to their cultural concerns as well as their economic concerns. You know, if this had been an election based on the economy, we would have won hands down.
Maxine Waters, I hear you there.
Yeah, I'm here. And, you know, I just have a little bit of a different opinion about, you know, how we should approach this. In addition to continuing to work to turn out the vote, I do think we have to expand it, but you don't expand it the way, you know, consultants talk about it in terms of persuading people. You got to live something that you believe in, and people got to believe that you believe in what you're doing. And that's what we kind of failed to do. We have enough conservatives in the Democratic Party, but they all got beat. Stenholm, you know, they wiped out our conservatives. They are ones who, you know, basically had a conservative message, who vote conservatively, who, you know, are centrists or whatever you want to call them, and they did not get voted back in. They got voted out. They were not able to appeal to the conservative base.
So are you saying, Congresswoman, Democrats turn left, be more liberal, be more progressive? And
well,
if
here's
that's
what I'm saying more than anything else. I'm saying, first of all, believe in something. You know, one of the things that people liked about Bush is they believed that he believed what he was doing was right. They really bought into the fact that he was prepared to do something, say something, and stand by it and fight for it.
And that was
and
powerful
not
in
so
itself.
Sure about us.
Mm-hmm.
They're not so sure about us, whether or not we believe deeply and we're willing to stand by what we're asking other people to do and that we're consistent. I think we have to live what the Democratic Party supposedly stands for all year round, day in and day out, and stop trying to nuance, stop trying to have it both ways. And yes, you know, it's not a matter of persuading people at campaign time. You persuade people by what you do all year round, and people feel like they know who you are, and they can depend on what you say.
So what's the message, then, that you want to put out to win next time? And when you put it out there, who's going to rally around it, who didn't rally around it this time, Congresswoman?
Well, first of all, for me, I mean, I am not looking for the DLC or the so-called centrists to do anything differently. I guess what they will do now is they'll get a Bible and they'll start thumping and trying to appeal to the evangelicals. You know, those of us who come from the progressive wing in this party, we don't do it like that. We are who we are, and we talk to people about what we believe is good for America and what we believe government ought to be doing and how we believe in government being of assistance to the least of these and how we believe that we can make America a better place based on these principles.
Is it possible that that would mean Democrats as a perpetual minority party, given what we've just seen?
No, absolutely not. I don't believe that at all. This business of, you know, talking about cultural values, et cetera, it's not a matter of at election time. You know, this business about, you know, why they voted against us. For example, if it's same-sex marriage or if it's abortion or any of those issues, I think what you have to do is you have to allow real debate to take place, real discussion to take place, and not trying to get this stuff done in sound bites at toward the end of the campaign term. You know what I'm saying? I think real debate and discussion has not taken place on these issues in the United States.
Maxine Waters, we hear you loud and clear. I know we've got to let you go, but thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're
Congresswoman.
Welcome. All right.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters from California's 35th District joining us there from Los Angeles. Will Marshall, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation now from Washington, Mike Lux. He's president of American Family Voices, a Democratic strategist, a political blogger who helps direct funding and energy to projects that he says fill in the holes in Democratic Party strategy. Mike Lux, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Look out on that big sea of red, Mike, that helped push George Bush to victory, and tell us what went wrong this week for the Democrats.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I agree with both Will and Congresswoman Waters. They have different pieces of the puzzle. But I think it's a mistake for Democrats to get into sort of a tired old debate between going left or going center. I think the bottom line is we had a situation where message trumped field. The Republicans have a very clear brand for their party. Less government, lower taxes, tough on terrorists and strong military. And we have not had that kind of consistent year in, year out brand as a party. And it really hurt us in this election. We had a candidate who focused more on his bio than on message, than on a clear, compelling message to middle America. And we had a great field operation. Will talked about that. It was a superb field operation. But at the end of the day, you can't win with field alone, and you can't win with mobilization alone. I agree with him on that. We need a message that both on economics and on values appeals to blue-collar whites, appeals to rural and small-town voters, appeals to folks in some fundamental ways that we're not doing right now.
And why the absence of that? Everybody knows that a party needs that going into an election. The Democrats have struggled with this for a long time, gone a bit this way and a bit that way. Why the failure is now in 2004 to have a clear brand, a clear message, as you say?
Well, I'm not sure why the failure. I feel like we keep nominating candidates who, outside of Bill Clinton, who did have that kind of ability to put together a message, who have not emphasized message, and it may be because they're too scared to say what they believe. On that, I agree with Maxine, that they may be too timid. I think we need to really focus in as a party and really examine what's going on with our message. I think you're right that this was a golden opportunity for us. I actually think we've now had three elections in a row where both economic conditions and social issues and now the Iraq war favored our party, and yet we haven't been able to pull off a win yet. And I think that's very troubling, and we need to spend some real time and effort thinking through why we can't do a consistent brand as a party. One of the things I think we need to really focus in on is the fact that the Democratic Party can make a convincing case that it is a party that is for an inclusive family, that really the family of America. I mean, in my family...
An inclusive family. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I'll tell you what I mean. In my family, we have Christian conservatives, and we have liberal Methodists. In my family, we have people who are agnostic or not believers at all. I've got farmers in my family and high-tech people and stay-at-home moms. I've got people ranging the spectrum in terms of political beliefs and religious beliefs.
So it sounds
all,
a lot
but,
like
but
mine,
we all,
but with all
we all
that.
Still, yeah. We all still care about each other, and we all still look out for each other, and we help each other when we're in trouble. And the big kids are taught not to pick on the little kids, and the healthy ones in the family help take care of the sick ones. And I think that's got to be the message of the Democratic Party.
Will Marshall, what about it? George Bush seemed to go with Karl Rove just the opposite direction, to really home in on something less inclusive than that, and he's the guy who's going to be in the White House next year.
Well, I really agree with Mike that the Republicans have a much clearer, sharper brand ideology than Democrats do. I think that may be inescapable because the Democrats have traditionally been a broader coalition, more heterogeneous, and a more inclusive coalition. It's been the great glory of our party that it's the portal to opportunity for otherwise excluded Americans and immigrants, new Americans. So I think there's some degree of difficulty that's inherent in just being a Democrat in terms of getting the kind of sharp, crystalline message that the Republicans have. But I also want to make this point, if I could. You know, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves. We lost an election that, you know, might have been winnable, but we also just ought to say that, sometimes history intervenes with events that are one-off and are not repeatable. And in this case, the history that intervened was 9/11. And George Bush, who had been, you know, really sinking like a stone, frankly, before 9/11, was transformed by that event. And if he hadn't gotten us into Iraq, I think he would have won this going away. So the security is still a powerful backdrop here, and the fact that he's the incumbent and he was there on September 12, 2001, has created a tremendous advantage for him. So I don't think these Republican advantages are immutable, or we can overcome them, but I do think we just have to come to grips with what they are.
But if you're waiting for that 9/11 bell to stop ringing, you could be waiting for a long time.
Well, I'm not waiting for the 9/11 bell to stop ringing. I mean, George Bush only has four more years, mm-hmm. and we'll have another presidential election. What I am suggesting is that Democrats now finally have got to come to grips with a 40-year problem, which is that when you ask the public, which party do you trust to keep the country strong, to make it more secure, to be tough in facing down enemies, and yes, we do have them, they've generally picked the Republicans. And we have to come to grips with why that's happened and try to create a tough, you know, principled Democratic foreign policy that lays rest about our toughness, lays to rest their doubts about Democratic toughness.
We're talking tonight about the Democratic Party after the Kerry defeat. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined by Will Marshall and Mike Lux. Gary's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Speaking as someone who's very disheartened by the loss of this election by the Democrats, I think I agree with the Congresswoman that the Democrats, I believe their message is in step with a lot of America, mainstream values, that it's only the message that's been co-opted. And I think if they need to do a better job and also, I mean, obviously, but also craft it all the time and you know, sell their brand. I mean, this was my, you know, my point that your guests have all hit on is because I really do firmly believe that most people, you know, except for some fringe issues that, you know, the voters spoke about with gay marriage and things. I mean, I think, you know, the war, I mean, this president was so vulnerable that, you know, they just have to craft it better and all the time.
You call that a fringe issue, but it's been asserted by some that the you know, vote that the gay marriage issue brought out could have been the margin of difference in this election. I don't know, but you know that's out there.
Well, as I think your last guest said, I mean, the Democratic Party is inherently diverse. So, you know, that is one issue maybe the majority of Americans don't agree with. But I think most issues in terms of economic equality or fair representation and not unjust wars and honesty and in terms of the grievance to go to war and all these things, I think, is in step if the Democrats craft their message better and more consistently.
Gary, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Sounds like a Democrat who still can't quite believe what happened this week. Mike Lux, what about the possibility that the country, and Karl Rove would say so, and many others this week, that the country's simply edging steadily more conservative? Is it possible for the Democratic Party to follow, or is that the way to look at it?
No, I don't think that's the way to look at it at all. Karl Rove is spinning, and people are listening to him because they won. But if you look at all of the polling that was done in the weeks before the election, the electorate that voted was a more conservative electorate by not by much, but by the crucial 2 or 3% that made the difference, was an electorate that was more conservative than the public as a whole. What's happened is that the Republicans, who have always had an edge in money, now have done a brilliant job of field organizing. They put $125 million this year into their field operation, and they built an amazing operation. They also have the advantage of having the institution of the evangelical church. And outside of the black community, Democrats don't have that kind of institutional advantage. So they were able to produce an electorate that was about 3 percentage points more conservative. If you look at all of the polling numbers and all of the data underneath who actually voted, they were able to produce the critical margin in those folks.
But of course, that's all it takes. And if you can't get that margin yourself in the Democratic Party, you are the perpetual minority party, the perpetual opposition.
Well, I think that's right, and I think we did not appeal to middle America the way we should have. But I don't think it has anything to do with the country as a whole becoming more conservative. I think the country as a whole is about in the same place on most fundamental issues as it was during the 1990s. And I think, you know, most polling speaks to that. Most of the demographic analysis speaks to that. I think that in recent years, in the last 4 years, the Republicans have been very, very smart about turning out their vote and about keeping the focus on fear and security issues.
And they're celebrating a lot of victories tonight, and the Democrats are not. Will Marshall, Michael Lux, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the Democratic Party after the Kerry defeat. You can join the conversation. What will it take to plant some blue states in the red middle of the country? And how did the GOP come to own the moral values turf? How could Democrats get it back? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Democratic Party after the Kerry defeat and the soul-searching Democrats are doing about their performance and their future. You can join the conversation tonight. Do Democrats have to become more socially conservative to win or become more aggressively progressive? And what is, what should be the Democratic Party's base? How can the Democrats stay true to their principles and win again? What's it going to take to put the Democrats back in power? Can it happen? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight by Will Marshall, president of the Progressive Policy Institute. He was co-founder of the Democratic Leadership Council, pushed the party centrist in the 1990s. From Washington by Mike Lux, president of American Family Voices. And right now, also from Washington, by Simon Rosenberg. He's president of the New Democrat Network. It's a fundraising and advocacy group that runs media campaigns designed to advance a progressive agenda. Simon Rosenberg, thanks for joining us tonight.
No problem.
We know you've been out there looking and thinking and studying the entrails like all the rest. What's your interpretation of what happened this week and what needs to happen going forward?
First of all, you've had great guests on. It's been great to listen to them. And Mike and Will are smart guys, and obviously Congressman Waters has a lot to add. I'll just say one other thing I think that hasn't been said enough, which is, you know, you shift 100,000 votes in a single state and you'd be having a bunch of Republicans on here talking about how their party was in disarray.
But the Democrats did not do that, and they don't have the White House, and they don't have the House, and they don't have the Senate.
But I think we have to recognize that the last two presidential elections have been decided by a single state, and I think that to argue that the president got a mandate over the last couple of days is silly. I mean, this is a very evenly divided country. Things are extraordinarily close in the electorate. The way the Electoral College works these days, the campaigns don't compete for the popular vote. They compete only for the 270.
Mr. Rosenberg, we're leaving mandate aside tonight, but Democrats lost the popular vote, the electoral vote, the House, the Senate, and the White House. So what do you make of it?
I make of it that we've got some work to do, but then I don't think that we're in a period where we should be distraught and dismayed. I think we're on the right track. We've started to turn this party around. I think what Mike was talking about earlier, that we have figured out that we have to do a better job at conveying our values and our ideas to the American people, that we have to have a sharper, clearer message, as Will was talking about earlier. But I think there's unanimity now on that. I think for many years, Democrats were in denial that we had a problem. And I think that the great era of Democratic denial about the fact that the conservative movement has become very powerful, not just politically, but intellectually, ideologically, and that they're offering a very powerful alternative to what we offered for so many years as Democrats, that I think our party is unified in the sense that we know that we need to go in a common direction, which is we need a better agenda on the economy, a better agenda on security matters, a better agenda on family, faith, and community issues. And I think that that unity after an election, where there isn't this kind of awful, divisive kind of fighting that happens after a loss, to me has been very assuring that we're on the right path, that over time, you know, look, we had a setback. This was not a good week for us. But I think we're headed in the right direction as a party, and I'm very optimistic that the changes that we're making, the investments we're making in new institutions and new groups that are becoming more powerful communicators for our values is going to make our party much stronger in the years to come than we have been previously.
Tell us more about that, Simon Rosenberg, because I have to say, coming on the heels of this triple setback, saying we're on the right path in itself sounds a bit like denial. Tell us.
I don't think it is denial, because I think that, as Will pointed out, this is a 40-year problem, and that we have been in various stages of decline or success over a long period of time. And I think that what's happened over the last couple of years is that we have finally recognized that we don't have a powerful enough or compelling enough message to win the majority in America. I think for a long time, Democrats believed that we were the natural majority party, that it was just an aberration that conservatives had won power around the country. Now we know this is a powerful force, and they're doing a better job at conveying their values and their ideas to the American people than we are, and we've got to fight on different terms. And I think the incredible innovation and entrepreneurship you saw on our side this cycle with groups like Move On and the Media Fund and ACT and Media Matters for America, I think to some degree some of the stuff we've been doing at NDN, is a sign that Democrats are taking seriously, that we're outmatched, we've got to fight better and harder, we've got to have better ideas and better ways to communicate it, we have to have a better agenda, and that it's going to take some time, but I think we've turned the corner. I mean, I really believe that. I think Will and I, when we used to work together, would sit in these rooms and make the case that things weren't going well for Democrats, and people would look at us and say, what the hell are you talking about? Everything's fine. That's not the case any longer. So the first thing you got to do if you're going to fix a problem is acknowledge you have one, and I think that we've done that as Democrats, and I'm optimistic that we're putting things in place that are going to 5, 10, 15 years from now are going to put us back in the majority. But it's going to
Well, that's a good feeling, but a long time. Let's get some callers in here. Katie's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Katie. You're on the air.
Yes, I don't mean to correct you, but my name is Kay.
Pardon me.
And I do thank you for taking the call.
It's good to have you.
And gentlemen, I value anybody's vote that was based on the facts. If they visited each candidate's website and looked at the economic layout and military, that I respect. You waited out. Okay, fine. But when I have been hearing through the months, the Republican side and the right talk radio shows and things like that, it was an accelerated movement totally towards your faith and the issues that go under that with the abortion and the gay. That has just been so solid. And to me, I don't know if Bush was transformed into his own little evangelical ministry up on his last stump speeches, but to me it was starting to sound like a Martin Luther King, kind of, with no disrespect to MLK.
So what do you think about the post-election analysis of why the Democrats didn't do better, Kate?
We probably were reasonable to look at the facts and the issues and not be so judgmental of others.
What are you getting at there?
I have been assessing, based on just my media outlets that I've been tapping into, that the right was accelerating judging and the fear, and they kind of bent backwards over the Bible again.
Okay, we've got it. Let us pick it up, and thanks very much for your call. Will Marshall, what about it? We saw in the exit polls going out, and of course there was a lot of information there that wasn't very good, but very strongly this theme of moral values as a top priority of an overwhelming percentage of Republican voters, not among Democrats, and that cited as the ground on which the Democrats lost. What do you make of that analysis?
Well, that was the top concern. 22% said moral values was their top concern, and those voters went overwhelmingly for George Bush. But on the economy, which ranked second at 20%, by the same margin, 80 to 18 of the voters who ranked the economic and jobs concerns highest went for Kerry. I sort of want to reinforce Simon's point that there's a lot to build on in this election. Had this been an election about the economy instead of security and, to some extent, cultural values, Democrats would have won, hands down. Unfortunately for us, it wasn't. But clearly, we have a lot of work to do on the cultural side, and we don't have to become more conservative. That's a myth, and nobody here, I think, has argued that at all. You know, Bill Clinton showed us the way. Bill Clinton, you know, managed to honor faith without giving up on any important progressive principle. Bill Clinton was comfortable with the language of spirituality and biblical language, and he used it without violating any constitutional stricture on separation of church and state. This is not rocket science. It's not something Democrats haven't done before. And I think that we just have to be more attentive to putting our values first, maybe before our cherished programs, as we talk to middle America about what we really believe in.
Let's get some more callers in here. You guys sound pretty sanguine given the outcome this week for Democrats. Ken's calling from Grants Pass, Oregon. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Great. How are you guys doing tonight?
Wonderful. Thanks, Ken.
You know, a couple things. I'm a truck driver now, but I used to work for SEIU, which is one of the biggest unions out there.
Sure, very politically active.
Yes, very politically active. And, you know, people, when they're not, when they're supposed to be watching people's contracts and stuff and their independent bargaining agreements, when it comes election time, that's a whole company almost of people out there rooting for the Democrats and getting out to vote.
Yeah.
So they have an institutionalized system of getting people out to vote. So the Republicans are matched that way by the Democrats. One thing I learned about that, though, is that the message has always been the same with the Democrats. They say they speak for the person, the common people in the United States, but yet the common person has health insurance, they have a house, and they don't see what the Democrats are talking about because it doesn't apply to them. They're talking to the minority, of people out there, and that's why they're always going to lose elections.
Ken, do you think the country is more conservative than the Democrats think it is?
Oh, it's way more conservative than the Democrats think it is. Think of Bill Clinton when he had to go to the right to get reelected. And that was the only way he got reelected was by going and passing welfare reform, et cetera, et cetera, and working with the House Republicans.
Ken, we've got it, and thanks very much for your call. Mike Lux, let me put it to you. We're looking at this map of the election results, and there's that enormous swath of red. Everyone stared at it in the last few days that just runs all over the middle of this country. How do you suggest the Democrats get some blue states out there if that's what they need to do to win?
Well, I think it goes back to what Will and Simon were talking about. I really agree with them on talking about values and talking about our faith, because Democrats are just as religious as Republicans.
Is that true? Are you sure that's true?
I think in general, and the religion, our religions are more diverse. Our beliefs are more diverse.
But I think I've seen polls saying that the percentage of churchgoers among Republicans is significantly higher than among Democrats.
Percentage of churchgoers, but there's plenty of people who don't go to church three times a week or every Sunday, who still are very spiritual and believe in God. So, but listen, my point is this: Bill Clinton in 1996 beat Mr. Small Town America Bob Dole by 9 percentage points, and he did better among rural and small town voters than any Democrat since LBJ in the 1964 landslide. And this was after vetoing a partial birth abortion bill, supporting gays in the military, and signing two gun control bills.
But he's now lauded as a kind of a political magician who could pull off almost anything. Do you have to come up with another Bill Clinton to win as Democrats?
No, I don't think so. Look, in the 1990s, we won four out of five elections in the 1990s went to the Democrats. Democrats gained seats in Congress. They won presidential elections. We had one big loss in 94. In 2000, it was basically even. I mean, Democrats picked up seats in the Senate and the House. The presidency was a dead heat. We probably won, but it was stolen. And then in 2002 and 2004, we've had narrow defeats. So I don't think that speaks to a desperate party, but I do think it speaks to having to talk about our values, having to talk about what we believe, having to talk about our belief in family and community. And I think if we do that, we'll be fine.
Will, how do you define the Democratic Party's base?
Well, the Democratic Party's base is, a wide and disparate group. It is all the obvious, folks, African-Americans, teachers. We do better among women. But, the truth is, and this is why I kind of resist the idea that energizing the base by itself is some kind of panacea. The truth is your definition of your base is fluid. It's not static. It varies from election to election. This time we did better with postgraduates, people with postgraduate degrees, than we've done in the past. Is that a part of our base? Well, it is now, for now. And the traditional base of the Democratic Party, which was the working middle class, those blue-collar workers that Franklin Roosevelt cemented into the New Deal coalition, they've been voting Republican for way too long. We've gotten back to a point, thanks to Bill Clinton, I think, where we speak to their economic interests. Well, we haven't gotten back to the point where we speak to the working middle class's cultural outlook. And so we've got to concentrate on that. But,
how do you put California and New York, huge majorities, together with that middle American value system, Will?
Well, because, look, California and New York voted overwhelmingly for Bill Clinton. Look, we're talking about religion. What is one of the most religious groups in America, and a group that wants to hear more about religion in public life rather than less, according to Pew polling? African Americans. So the idea that we're just a rigorously secular party and the Republicans are the party of faith is just not correct. A good part of the Democratic base, Latinos, who are heavily Catholic, African Americans, and progressive Christians and Jews. After all, there's a progressive tradition of liberal churches who have
use religious language to advance a progressive tradition.
We've got to speak in that tradition. I'm afraid we're out of time. Democrats will have some time to stare at that map of this week's results and think about all of it. We thank each of you for sharing your thoughts with us tonight. Will Marshall, president at the Progressive Policy Institute, Simon Rosenberg, president of the New Democrat Network, and Mike Lux, president of American Family Voices. Thanks to each of you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.